we would have our dealer meetings, and I would always pray right before the meal at the dealer meetings, every single meal. And people would come up and say, hey, I really appreciated you doing that. Or why do you pray at the meetings? And it gives you that opportunity. You know, a funny story, we had a dealer VIP meeting, and we brought in, I want to say, 15 or 20 dealers from all over the country. And we were going to have dinner that night. And this just goes to show you how people listen to you. But our vice president of marketing, sales and marketing, had gone to the restroom. And so they said, are we ready to eat? And I said, yeah, yeah. And they said, do you want to pray? I said, yeah, let's pray. And somebody said, well, Eric's not here. I said, that's all right. He's an atheist. Let's go ahead and pray. And so he's Lutheran, but he came back to the table, and he sat down at his table, and all the guys at the table were saying, how long have you been an atheist? Really?
He's like, what happened?
He had no idea. That's exactly what he said, Greg.
What did Jack say?
What did Jack do to me?
Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
Welcome to another episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. I'm your host today, Ben Borgman, and as always, Pastor Craig Etheridge is on the call with us today.
Hey, Brother Ben, how are you?
I'm doing great. We are in the podcast room. We're taking a little break. We had a little thing called summer.
Yeah. And
so you're looking all tan. Look, Craig's like up a half a skin tone.
This body does not tan, Ben. You know, it is what it is. It doesn't tan. I can't get in the sun or I would combust or something.
We were in Puerto Rico all week. He comes back. We went for a training. He stayed after with him and Liz, his wife, and to take a little time off. And he comes back. He's like, am I tan? No.
No. Okay,
you're not. Sorry.
I hid under the umbrella the whole time.
There you go. Hey, there. Safety first.
That's right. Safety first.
And so it's great to be back on today. We've had, again, busy summer, but ready to get back to it. I've sent my son off to college last week, so it's been an emotional summer, but man, we are ready to get back in the podcast room today and ready to have some fun.
Yeah.
We're already kind of enjoying having a little conversation today with our guest, Mr. Jack Springer.
Let's go.
Good morning.
How are you, sir?
I'm great. Glad to be here. Thank you.
Yeah, so Jack is a member of our board, number one. He's also a church member here at Cross Creek. And the most important part, the reason why he's on here, is he is a disciple-making leader. Yeah. And so we're going to have a conversation with Jack today, just really highlighting, like we've done with a few other people in this previous episodes in this season, is just really highlighting disciple-making leaders in action. Because, Craig, I know you tell pastors and leaders all the time, you need disciple-making leaders at every level of your church, whether that is somebody holding a door, a parking lot person, not just high-level leadership, high-capacity volunteers, but your goal or your aspiration as a leader and a disciple-making leader of a church should be to raise up disciple-making leaders everywhere and then releasing them into wherever God's planted them.
That's right.
And that's what we're talking about today is business. We're going to talk a lot about Jack is a businessman and has led at very high levels of corporations and entrepreneur. And so we just want to get his perspective and we want to get your perspective, Jack, of just what does that look like? What's your story? How did God get you to where you were and how did he use you? And again, we hope that as you're listening to this episode, that that's an encouragement to you and maybe spur you on because we see God using so many people in the marketplace, in wherever they are with how God's wired them and uses them, there's great opportunity. And we really want you to be a disciple-making leader in action wherever God's planted you. So that's what we're going
to
talk about.
Ben, also just to say, if you are a business leader right now, then we hope that this inspires you to be a disciple-making leader in the workspace and to stretch your thinking about what does that mean and how you work alongside your pastor and your church to advance the kingdom. And if you're a pastor listening, then this should encourage you to look for these disciple-making leaders that are in the workspace and how can you come alongside them and cooperate together. So we hope that on both sides of that, that there's a lot of encouragement going around today.
Yeah, and shameless plug for a future episode. We're going to bring Jack back in, and we're going to talk super tactical aspects of doing just that. And so just look out for more of that release in a few weeks after this episode. So if you're listening to this one, stay tuned for more from Jack, and just really practically engaging your workplace. But right now, we just want to get to know you, Jack. We want the listeners to really hear how God's wired you, how God's placed you, and how he's used you throughout the years in business. So Jack, just tell us a little bit, again, let's start with who you are, family, maybe some spiritual background type stuff.
Yeah, I'll go all the way back to the beginning. I grew up in West Texas in Odessa, Texas.
Amen.
I know, Plainview, right?
Hey, that's right. Yeah. Where everything is in plain view, Jack. That's how I got its name.
Odessa as well. A few mesquite trees block it occasionally. But, you know, I spent the first 24 years of my life there. My parents went to church. They were Christians, so I was raised in church, and my sister and I were always in church, Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night. And, you know, back then, I've always played a lot of sports. Back then, it's totally different than today. You know, they play ball on Wednesday night. They play ball on Sunday. Yeah. But back when I guess it tells you how old I am, but back then, you know, we took Wednesday night off. We took Sundays off, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But I had the privilege of going to Odessa Permian High School.
Oh, wow. There you go.
In the 70s, which back in the 70s, it was Odessa Permian and Moeller High School out of Cincinnati. And then you had Plano in Dallas. Those were the three nationally known programs. Yeah. And so I went to Odessa Permian and then always in church. And then we had changed churches, I think, when I was about 18 years old. And shortly after that, I met Brenda, my wife. And Brenda's a little bit older than me. I'll tell you a funny story. You know, we dated for, I want to say, 3 to 6 months. And my mother, she, you know, she was very sensitive to her age, but she didn't know we were dating. So after about 3 to 6 months, I finally went in. I said, hey, just want you to know, I'm dating Brenda. And it was just complete shock in her face and in her eyes because she's so much older than me at that age, and she really wasn't.
What was that? What was the age gap? Or what's the age
gap? Age gap's about 4 years.
Okay.
And so if I'm 18, 19, you know, she's 23 or so.
Yeah.
But that also led to a different conversation with Brenda because we had dated for around a year and a half, and she pulled me aside and she said, all right, you're going to have to make a decision. I'm getting older. And if you're not going to move forward with this relationship, then I'm going to go do something else. So pretty quickly.
Decision, you know, time.
Yeah,
huh?
It was decision. Promise ring first. And then
yeah,
after that,
that's
we
right.
got married.
There you go.
So we stayed in church. And I think when I was 19, we began going to, we weren't married yet, began going to Temple Baptist Church with Jerry Thorpe as a pastor. And Jerry was a pastor that, fantastic preacher, fantastic teacher, but he was a winning souls type of pastor. You know, one of the things I remember about Temple is they had a bus ministry that would bring in 500 or 600 kids every single week, and began teaching the junior high when I was about 20 years old. And so I've been teaching ever since then. I was able to graduate from junior high, 7th grade, to 9th grade, to high school, to college. And now I'm finally in Faith Builders here at Cross Creek teaching my own age.
Well, you paid your dues with the 5th graders and the middle schoolers.
And that is paying dues, yes.
For
yes,
sure, yes. For sure.
Went to school in UTPB is where I got my degree from. And went into a company called, and it was while I was still in college, went into a company called Gibson Distributing. And Craig probably knows the name because Plainview had one of those. In Odessa, it was a little bit different. There were, I think, 10 locations, all about 100 to 150,000 square feet. And the way I like to portray it is it was a precursor to the Walmart.
Yeah.
I mean, it had everything, groceries, hard lines, soft lines. And I began as purchasing manager. And 3-4 years later, after I'd graduated, I was the controller. And then in 1985, we moved to Fort Worth, and I became the controller and then eventually the CFO at Monix Department Stores. And so the first 15 years of my life, I spent in industry. And then after that, I went into consulting, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But Brennan and I had two children. We had Sean and we had Craig. And then Sean today, they both live around here. Sean is a cyber detective for the city of Fort Worth.
Oh, wow.
And Craig's never married, and he just lives around here and works. And then Sean has had three boys. And you were talking about earlier your child going off to college. So I have a junior in college. And then yesterday our middle grandchild went to East Texas Baptist University.
Oh, okay.
And then the third one went into high school. So age is coming quick.
Yeah, it really is. Faster than you think, right?
It is. So we raised our kids in church. They've accepted Christ, and our grandchildren have accepted Christ. And one of the things that I did, and I think that when you talk about discipleship, and you can talk about it from a business standpoint or church, but it's also family. Mm-hmm. So when each of my boys reached the age of 13, it was kind of like that age, you're going into that teenage years. I spent 30 days for each of them, and each day I would write about a subject. And a lot of it had to do with their spiritual condition and what they do as they grow up. And so trying to, even at that age, to disciple them and challenge them to read that every few years, you know, just to stay on top and of what God wants for them. So then I guess in about, right around the turn of the century, I went into consulting, left the CFO position, went into consulting. And with a couple of guys, we formed our own partnership and began going into companies. Initially, it was to take a company to the next level. So we might go in as the interim CEO or as the interim chief reorganization officer and try to go from, say, $1 billion to $1.5 billion. But right after the turn of the century, it became more of a turnaround. Mm. And it literally flipped from 90%, 10% building businesses up and turn around to 90% becoming the turnaround side. And so you're in a lot of businesses normally for a period of a year to 3 or 4 years, and then you move on. So you're touching a lot of people. You're meeting a lot of people. One of the businesses that I went into, and I was CEO there for 3 years, was Diamondback Tactical. And when you talk about an area that is just, you know, it's fertile, I guess the best way to put it, we Diamondback Tactical made body armor and sold to just about everything you can think of, ATF, FBI, special ops, all of that. And what we would do is we would hire these special ops people. And if you've been in the military for any period of time, you realize that it's kind of socialistic. They provide your meals. They provide your housing. So these guys come out of the military and begin working for a company. And the very first conversation is always is a hilarious conversation. You start talking about the compensation and well, you're going to get this base of this amount. And then for every contract you sign, you'll get 2%. So they start calculating on a $20 million contract, right? 2%. Is this for the first month? No, this is for the life of the contract. So to watch them convert to capitalism is a really funny thing.
You got to see that conversion right there.
You can see it in front of them.
Their eyes lit up.
If they can do math, they convert. Yeah. So, but, you know, a lot of those guys, these are tough guys, but many of them are suffering from PTSD or they're suffering from guilt. And so it's a natural arena to have a conversation about Christ at the proper time. And so I did that working in consulting in my own consulting company for a number of years. And then in 2009, I went to Malibu Boats.
Yeah, and that's my son. You're one of my son's favorite people just because of that. He's the CEO of Malibu Boats. My son thinks he's like he's missed his calling to be a pro surfer. We sold our boat a few years ago, and he's like, oh, I could have been a pro. I'm like, no, son, I don't think you would.
Anyway, yeah, you used to have the ocean to surf, right? Yeah. Now all you need is a boat.
I mean, you talk about, surf I mean, boat. These things are, it's wild. It's wild. I'm sure you saw it all as you were helped kind of turn around Malibu into one of the, you know, top three brands in yeah. America now. Anyway, go ahead.
In 2012, we came out with Surfgate, which by the time I had left Malibu, we were licensing the IP to over 20 other marine companies. Wow. And so that was what allowed the surfing. You know, you're talking about a 5-foot wave, 20-foot back. So
yeah. It's fun, especially for us old guys. It's easier on your knees. It doesn't hurt when you fall as bad. You can talk to the people in the boat. You go slow.
That's so exactly
it's
right.
It's kind of an old, like it makes you feel a little younger.
Kind of like pickleball.
Yeah, kind of, yeah.
Here's the way I describe it. If you're a skier, you're going 34 miles an hour. And if you don't have a good driver, you're drinking about 3 gallons of water. If you're a wakeboarder, you're getting air, you're doing jumps, you know, you're tearing up your knees, and you're going about 24 miles an hour. With surfing, you're about 11.2 miles an hour, and when you fall, it's like slipping into butter.
Who doesn't want to do that?
That's right.
It is. It's addictive. It's a great sport. I'm glad glad it got invented. So
yeah,
all right. So once you got into Malibu, how did that, or what was that
So when I got into Malibu in 2009, it was right after the Great Recession and the banking crisis. And so you had the Great Recession that, or actually it was still going on, and Malibu was at a low. I mean, if you look at marine, somebody doesn't need to buy a $100,000 boat. It is a product that you buy if you can and if you want to. And so the market was down about 70%. And I made a decision to leave my partnership and join Malibu. I saw a lot of opportunity. And it turned out to be a good, godly decision, prayed about it a lot, but went into Malibu and we started that growth. I think when I got to Malibu, the first year we did $68 million. And then we did $1.5 billion in 2023. And so in 2014, we went public. So we took the company public. But it was just a continual growth, adding companies, adding new businesses. And I think we went from one plant to, I think, six plants around the world, including Australia. And so it was just a fantastic growth opportunity through the years.
So, I mean, it's always great to sit down and talk to you and listen how God used you and wired you to create this growth in business and all that. But I know, again, I know your heart. I know you're looking deeper than that, and you want your life to matter for more than that. You want a kingdom ROI as you're doing business. So maybe tell us, you know, tell us a story of God using you or using business and using you in that to really either, you know, gospel conversations, you know, really invest in people for kingdom purposes.
Yeah, a couple of stories. I think, you know, there are many ways to reach people if you're in the business workplace. And it can be done through just talking to people, getting to know people, but also when they're hurting, when they're in the middle of something. And at Malibu, we had a director of customer service and warranty. He didn't report to me. He was actually two levels down. And he came into my office one day, and he said, I need to talk to you. I said, okay. And he said, I think I'm probably going to need to leave Malibu. I think you're probably going to make me leave Malibu. But he had come very close to having an affair with one of his employees. And, I mean, his marriage was on the rocks, and he just knew that coming out with this, that he would be terminated. And I said, well, I'll tell you what. Before we make any decisions at all, let me talk to you first about your relationship with your wife, your relationship with God. And so we did that for a while. And then I said, I want you to go to the person you report to, and I want you to tell them what you told me. And then we'll get together, and we'll come back and let you know what's going to happen. And so he did that, and I talked to the chief operating officer and who he reported to. And so we talked, and we came back to him and brought him back in together and said, you're not going to lose your job. He said, really? He said, I just knew I was going to lose my job. I said, no, you're not going to lose your job. But this needs to be a demarcation point in your life. You need to search God. You need to restore the relationship with your wife. And he did. And even today, you know, he has the relationship with his wife that's still there. Wow. He goes to church. He has that relationship with his God or our God and then his family. And each November, he's one of the people that I invite to my ranch to go hunting. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's been a relationship that's been fantastic through the years. And it started with something that I could have thrown away a lot.
Jack, that brings a question that if there's a marketplace leader listening to this right now, I hear oftentimes that they feel like, oh, you know, I want to have spiritual conversation in the workplace, but is that appropriate? Am I putting people in an awkward situation? How do I balance that? Can you speak to that? Because I think that's very common.
Yeah, and I understand where they're coming from. But at the end of the day, what we have to do is listen to God's voice. You know, I believe that there are providential appointments that he gives me. And I need to be listening. And you need to watch a person to see how they're reacting too. But if you're led to have that conversation, or if a circumstance pops up that leads you into that direction, don't shy away from it. You can still have that business relationship, but have that personal relationship as well. And I think that's really important, to be listening to what God is telling you to do in the conversation that you need to have.
Yeah. Did you, in this example that you just gave, you said this man was not reporting directly to you, so he was a couple levels down. Was there a gut check for you? Like, well, I don't want to, you know, leverage my influence as a CEO here, or you just said, hey, you know, God's given me an opportunity that he's clearly in crisis. I just want to meet him where he's at.
Well, fortunately, the COO was a Christian as well. And so when we had the conversation about it, we were on the same page. You know, I haven't really thought about it. If he would have said, no, he needs to go and been adamant about it, I think we would have had a longer, deeper conversation. But I don't know what the end result would have been.
Yeah.
But I think it was a God thing. God had his hand on it. You're looking at a person that can either be thrown away, and I've seen this a lot. People throw people away versus investing the time and investing themselves into that person.
Yeah, yeah.
Another example that I would give you, talking about the different ways that you can talk to people about Christ, is by taking a stand. Mm. And so back at Diamondback, I know for a couple of years, we had tried to get the San Francisco SWAT department as a customer. And because they're one of the preeminent SWAT departments, at least back in 2007, that you could imagine. So we'd worked very hard to get them to be a customer. And we finally won the contract, so to speak. And so they sent the contract, and somebody brought it in to me. They said, you have to sign this. I said, well, why do I have to sign it? This is kind of irregular. Why am I having to sign it? They said, they want you to read it and sign it. So I go, okay. So I start reading the contract. And one of the requirements in the contract is that 10% of our workforce had to be gay or lesbian. Mm. And so I read that and said, I'm not signing it. This is not going to happen. So we had a number of conversations and had a lot of people, because they had worked so hard for that. Mm. They came in, how can we walk away from this contract? How can we walk away? That led to a lot of conversations about what's right, what's spiritual, what's the right thing for this company. Mm-hmm. And so those types of conversations, even with those guys that had previously been, you know, special ops or whatever, they were very strong conversations that started them potentially on a path. And many of them did reach a path where they started going to church.
Wow. I bet you that took a lot of courage to say no to that.
It did, because we did work hard and it was a lucrative contract. But, mm-hmm. you know, in business, you have to make decisions that are ultimately going to be best for your company, mm-hmm. and best for your people. And sometimes you have to take that stand. But what I would encourage people is that when you take a stand, people are watching. And the thing that I don't think that we as business leaders can ever forget is that there's someone always watching us and seeing how we're going to do. You know, I'm the type of person that you can talk a lot, you can say a lot, but it really doesn't mean a lot to me unless I can observe it and see that you're actually living what you're talking. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's important as a business leader.
Yeah. When you had that situation or that contract, did you speak to the leader on the other side about it, or was it just denial?
And it was very cut and dried. I mean, San Francisco, you can imagine it was going to be their way or the highway.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As you talk about that, that can be encouraging, or that can be really, there's a lot of weight to that, right? Because people are watching. But I think it is an opportunity that, hey, this isn't a one-time conversation I'm having with people to impact their life. I'm actually getting to live in front of them. They're getting to watch. Do I lead with integrity? Do my words match my actions? And I think over the long haul, that's really what helps go deeper to mm-hmm. right to people's heart and have those conversations, maybe with some of these things that are hot button issues and, you know, that people argue on Facebook and Instagram about. But I think that when you get in a personal relationship, they see your integrity, they know where you're coming from, they know you, then they'll actually listen to those things better too.
Absolutely. And that goes back to, they need to see you live yeah. that life, mm-hmm. not just talk about it.
Yeah.
And so, Jack, going back to your first story, as you were telling me about that, not throwing, I think you said it this way, you didn't throw his life away. You didn't do that. I just can't help but think about how God's wired you for business and the opportunities he's given you of taking struggling businesses, going in, evaluating, revitalizing, growing. But I think he's also done that he's given you that vision for people too. And how do you see that those things intersect? Like, he's wired you this way and gifted you this way to take a company from that's in the cellar and take it public, and it's successful, and it's one of the, you know, the greatest brands of towboats there is, right? So he's wired you for that. How do you see the similarities with people?
If our relationship with God and our spiritual existence does not bleed over into other parts of our life, then, you know, we've got it compartmentalized, and we're not really living a Christian life. Mm. And it comes back to listening to when God speaks to you. The example that I gave you about the San Francisco SWAT, not everyone agreed with it. There were a lot of people that were upset, especially those that were going to be getting the commission off of it. And you have to spend a lot of time taking them through it. But you stand by what you're dealing with. You know, another example I'll give you is that there was a young engineer at Malibu. And, you know, I had a lot of opportunity, a lot of growth. And he had just started his family, had a young daughter that was under a year old. And the last picture that he and his wife ever took was at the Knoxville Boat Show. And she was behind the Malibu boat steering wheel, holding onto the steering wheel. That night, she died of SIDS.
Oh.
And so I heard about it. And so, and that's one thing that comes to us. You know, you hear about things. You don't have to know about everything. You hear about it. And so I reached out to Justin and asked him to come talk to me. And he came in and he said, you know, when HR told me that you wanted to talk to me, I thought you were going to fire me. I said, I want to talk to you about your daughter.
Wow.
And so we talked about that. I found out where he was at from a spiritual basis, and he was a Christian, but they'd gotten out of church. And, you know, stayed close to him for a while, to the point that his dad called me, who I didn't know, and just thanked me for talking to him. Said it was a great relief on him to hear about how I was a Christian and how I was encouraging him and so forth. I could have ignored that. So when you ask that question, Ben, it comes back to you listen to God. If God's telling you to reach out, even in that business environment, reach out to him. It can't be our business, but it has to be our vocation.
Yeah. I mean, go back to the definition of disciple-making leader, yeah. Craig. And right. Again, what I want everybody to hear and what we hope as you're listening to these disciple-making leaders in all walks of life is that no matter if you're a church staff member or a pastor preaching every week, that we should serve out of the overflow of
right.
Christ.
Yeah.
Every day you go to work, every day I'm at home with my family, I should be serving out of the overflow of what God is pouring into me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think exactly what you're saying, Ben, and what Jack is pointing out is we tend to, especially guys, tend to compartmentalize ourselves. This is our workplace. This is where I am at church. This is what I'm like at home. And we compartmentalize. And to your, like you said, Jack, you're not really a Christian if you're only a Christian at the church.
That's right.
Right? A Christian is one that walks with Christ, lives out of the overflow of his walk with the Lord, and investing in others wherever he is. And so you can't turn off your walk with God when you step into the office or to the C-suite. And so the challenge is, how do you express your walk with God in a genuine way wherever you are? And I think that a lot of guys, a lot of C-suite leaders, they struggle with, how do I express that in my corporate environment, especially when some environments are very, you know, they're adopting policies and so on that are hostile to the gospel message. And I've heard of that quite a bit ever since, you know, 2020. So Jack, what are some of the common challenges do you think leaders face in the marketplace as a follower of Christ? Just anything come to mind?
Yeah, I mean, if you are going to take a stand, you're always taking a chance. I was very fortunate in that when I had those conversations or anything that was going on, you know, no one ever attacked it. No one ever, quote unquote, turned me in or anything like that, which could have easily happened.
Right.
But I think you do it in some ways in an unobtrusive way. I think about it this way. It's almost like throwing a rock into a lake. You know, that immediate group of people around me, they knew where I stood. They knew I was a Christian. We would have Christian conversations. The majority of the people that reported me tended to be Christian. It just worked out that way. But then you have that next level. And that next level is watching. They're constantly watching you. Is he really living to what he says he's going to do and who he says he is? And then you have that third level that people know you from the outside. And again, they're watching, but they really don't know you in depth. So for a business leader one of the things that I did early on, I'm big on using word pictures. And so one of those factors of using word pictures is there are trigger words and trigger phrases that help people to understand that, oh, this guy's different or this lady is different. They, you know, I would use terms like blessed, being led to. Mm-hmm. But you use those trigger phrases or trigger words, and people invariably will come back and say, well, what did you mean by you're blessed? And so if you focus on not just the business vernacular, mm-hmm. but focus on the wording that you're using, people key into that. One of the things that we did at Malibu and previous companies, frankly, is we would have, you know, a big Christmas dinner, and we would always pray before that Christmas dinner. We would have our dealer meetings, and I would always pray right before the meal at the dealer meetings, every single meal. And people would come up and say, hey, I really appreciated you doing that. Or, why do you pray at the meetings? And it gives you that opportunity. You know, a funny story, we had a dealer VIP meeting. And we brought in, I want to say, 15 or 20 dealers from all over the country. And we were going to have dinner that night. And this just goes to show you how people listen to you. But our vice president of marketing, sales and marketing, had gone to the restroom. And so they said, are we ready to eat? And I said, yeah, yeah. And they said, do you want to pray? I said, yeah, let's pray. And somebody said, well, Eric's not here. I said, that's all right. He's an atheist. Let's go ahead and pray. And so he's Lutheran, but he came back to the table and he sat down at his table, and all the guys at the table were saying, how long have you been an atheist? Really?
He's like, what happened?
He had no idea. That's exactly what he said, Greg.
What did Jack say?
What did Jack do to me? Oh, my. You know, it's interesting as you're talking about this, Jack, what came to my mind is that, you know, we have all these encounters of Jesus with individuals, right, in the Gospels. You know, a leper here, a blind person there, you know, a woman that has a physical problem, all these kinds of things. And none of those were on his agenda at the beginning of the day. He was headed where he was headed, and there were all these opportunities that came to him. And that's not unlike a business leader. You're going to get up, you're going to have your agenda for the day. You got your series of meetings you're going to. You got decisions you have to make. You have confrontations or challenges, problems you're having to deal with. But at the same time, you have all these interruptions that are really divine interruptions. Mm-hmm. There are these times when you're bumping up against people that have a crisis, that have a problem, and that's the opportunity you have to say, Lord, how do I show them you in this conversation? And so in some ways, it kind of takes the pressure off, right? Because you're just like, okay, I just need to walk with the Lord throughout this day. Lord, use me. Lord, show me. Lord, bring me the people across my path that I need to encounter with. And then I just go about my day, but I'm aware of these conversations and aware of opportunities. And the Holy Spirit's really good to, hey, this is it. You know, the Holy Spirit's really good to point out, hey, say something to him. And then you have an ability. That's nothing different than what Jesus did.
And then we have a choice. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We either say something or we don't.
That's right.
But I thought about that before this morning, Craig, and that's exactly right. I always had an open door policy. And one of the reasons is I wanted to be accessible, but I wanted to be accessible for whatever. Mm-hmm. I am an A personality. You know, I'll be the first to admit that. And so I could very easily say, I'm going to get all of these things done today, and I'm not leaving until they're done. And no one or nothing should get in my way because I'm going to get that done. But if I do that, I'm going to miss some opportunities to have conversation. Maybe they're not even about Christ, but just encouraging somebody. Right. And so being open, you know, or somebody could walk into my office and I've got all this on my mind and this to-do list that I have to get done. Well, Ben, you have 5 minutes. What's on your mind? Well, you're going to be willing to share after that, right?
Nothing. Don't worry about it. Yeah. Yeah, super illuminating. It's all about a mindset. It's starting your day, walking with God, but then, hey, I'm walking into an opportunity. I have an intentional mindset. I'm creating space but I'm just anticipating God to move through this opportunity. So, Jack,
I might jump in here and say that's not unlike what pastors do. You know, a lot of our listeners are pastors. you know, you have your agenda, you have your series of meetings, you have problems you have to deal with, you have all that kind of thing, and we can ignore opportunities too. And so there's a lot of similarity in that, in how do you, as a leader, no matter what you're leading, whether it's in church or in the marketplace, how are you being open to these interruptions, not see them as problems, but see them as opportunities, and asking the Lord to speak through you. I think that's a wonderful thing. And plus, Jack, you know, in a church setting, you know, you're dealing a lot with church people, obviously. But in the marketplace, you're dealing with people, some never attend a church anywhere. Right. And so you may be the only real Christian they ever run across or have an encounter to meet. And so to me, that there's great opportunity. There can be a little bit of, wow, there's some weight to that, you know, but at the same time, you're kind of shepherding your people. You know, there's a good book called The Way of the Shepherd. That's a management leader book. And it's written by guys in the marketplace where he basically says, you know, you lead like a shepherd leads, you know, your people, you care for them, you set direction, you know, it's all the real good management stuff, but it's with this idea of shepherding. And just as I hear you talk, you kind of see yourself as, man, I'm shepherding these people. I'm my employees. I mean, I'm responsible for them. I'm responsible for how I lead the company. I'm responsible. They have families to take care of. And the great leaders I know, they really take ownership of that. You know, I'm making decisions that impact my employees, impact our company, and I want to shepherd all those opportunities really well. And that's a different mindset, right? As a shepherding mindset of your company and your people, that leads you into caring for them, being open to them, looking for opportunities, as opposed to, well, I'm just running this and it's all about me.
That's right. It becomes all about the money.
That's right.
And, you know, my view is that if you're a business leader, in the case of Malibu, we had over 3,000 people. And, you know, every decision that was made affected the lives of 3,000 people.
Yeah.
And then you expand that beyond their families, you're talking 9,000-10,000 people.
Yeah.
And they didn't have a say in it.
Yeah.
So you better be making good decisions. You better be making the right decisions. But also you need to be open to talking to people as they need to talk to you.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, Patrick Lencioni wrote a book called The Motive, and he talks about kind of this fictitious. If you're reading his books, you know, it's all – he's always got this fictitious company. And he has these two people that ascend to the CEO seat. He said one of them gets to the seat and feels like he earned that. He deserved it because of all the work that he put in to climb the ladder to get there. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about preserving his seat, mm-hmm, and enjoying his seat, where the other one ascends to the seat and sees it as a responsibility to shepherd and care for all the people under his care. Yeah. And those are two different mindsets, are they not? And,
they are.
And you probably have seen both, I would guess.
I've seen both. I mean, there are other CEOs that are Christians and they act a certain way. And then you have CEOs that are about protecting what they've been able to garner for themselves, mm-hmm, and stay in that role no matter what. And they'll run over anybody to do it.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things that we would always talk about is, you know, had various mantras. Each year I would come up with a mantra that we had lived by. But one that stuck throughout the years is, and said it many, many times, God first, family second, Malibu third, or God first, family second, you know, if it were another company, third.
Right.
And a lot of people say that. But again, it becomes one of those things where you can say a lot of things, but do you really live it?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the real practice was when somebody would come to me and they would say, hey, I'm going to be leaving the company. Well, why are you leaving the company? I mean, you have such a great role here. If their magic words were, this is what's best for my family, or this is what God is leading me to do, I would just back off immediately and say, okay, I'm going to go with that. Because it's easy to say, yeah, God first, or in your family second, and then say, no, you need to stay at Malibu no matter what.
Yeah.
And so you have to be sensitive to that, and you have to live it.
Yeah, that's so good.
So as we wrap up, Jack, one last thought I'd like you to kind of leave us with is, who impacted you the most in this realm of really, as Craig kind of put it, this shepherd mentality from a business perspective of really owning that opportunity? Was there a person along the way that really impacted you in that way?
You know, I would point to one is Christ himself. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would probably say from a mentoring standpoint, in my early 20s, I started praying for wisdom. Wisdom was something that I prayed for every single day. And through that prayer and through Christ giving me wisdom, I would say that he mentored me in that way. But the person here on earth is my best friend. We've been friends since I was 14. And, you know, we went to church together for a while. They stayed in Odessa, and now they're around here. But Johnny is a guy that was always encouraging. He was always prompting me to do things differently and had a tremendous amount of confidence in me and always a strong Christian. And so watching him helped me just not even by what he said, some of what he said, but by watching him, it also helped me to become better at disciple making.
Yeah. And I think we can all probably go around and share people that have done that in our life. But I just want to, hopefully you as a listener, I want you to really take that to heart, that you're not only tasked with leading your family, you know, what you have to do during the day, but who could you be an encouragement to? Not only shepherd your company, shepherd your, you know, those immediate people, but who could you encourage to be a shepherd as well?
Yeah, and I just would encourage our listeners today to, why not start every day for the next week just saying, Lord, here's my agenda, but I want you to fill me with your Spirit and make me open to seeing these interruptions as opportunities. Wherever I'm sitting at, if I'm leading a church or I'm leading a company, to be open to those encounters.
Right. Yeah. And that's where it starts. He gives us that heart of a shepherd, because he is the one true shepherd, and he gives us that heart. It's nothing we can manufacture on our own. We can have good business principles, but that true heart for people comes from Christ. So, Jack, thank you for encouraging us today. I appreciate your wisdom. I appreciate your heart. I appreciate the time that you give our board and the help you are to me personally and leading. And hey, we're adding staff. We're thinking about budget changes. Man, I have a wealth of knowledge right in front of me that I can always call, say, hey, let's go grab lunch, and you can and kind of run things by you. And I really appreciate that.
Appreciate the opportunity to be here.
Thank you, Jack.
And so, listeners out there, again, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you. If you want to connect with us and just learn more how to be a disciple-making leader, or need encouragement as a pastor of what does this look like to do in your church, or how do you equip disciple-making leaders in your church, we would love to help. So just contact us at disciplefirst.com. We'll have links in the show notes for that. And we just really appreciate you listening today.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.